Spawnily is the premier podcast spotlighting people of color. Every week, we talk news, what we've been playing, and tell you who's invited to the cookout. Our show is all about talking about gaming through a prism of blackness because we are the culture. Welcome to Bukkake, y'all.
Yo, what up, what up, what up, everybody in Bukkake? This is the Spawn of Me podcast with Khalif Adams. I'm your host, Khalif Adams. I hope you're doing wonderfully this week. I hope you're having a fantastic end of your 2023, and hopefully you will have a fantastic start of your 2024. I am super excited to be here with you. We're going to bring on our magical, mystical co-host, Cam Hawkins, in a second. But I did want to say massive love to everybody who checked out last week's show. First of all, we got so much good feedback. I got a ton of great feedback about the episode, about the conversations that Cam and I were having. And I think it really did bring to the forefront a thing that I always really care about, which is, you know, are folks really appreciating the angles that we're having these conversations with? And are folks really kind of resonating with those? And I felt like we got a ton of great feedback and folks hitting me in my DMs and being like, that was a really good conversation and really respected the angles that you and Cam were talking about it. And felt like there was some good energy there. That was something I wanted to talk about and thank all of you for, because I think as a creator, and I think Cam will probably be able to share in this as well, is like one of the things you worry about is, are you speaking into the void and are you kind of talking into, you know, space and time and no one is listening. And it's always great to be able to get that feedback that people really do appreciate the work and really do appreciate the sentiments that we were trying to be as two folks who are bringing you very, very nuanced conversations about some things that are not necessarily easy to talk about. And we wanted to make sure that we're giving you that angle. I had a pretty good week. I'm still on vacation from work, and it's always nice to get that downtime to be able to kind of think about the rest of the world and plan for 2024. And I am not one of those folks who's automatically like, it's time to grind. It's 2024 is happening. It's time to go. I need some time to just like decompress and wait and survey the area and kind of think about what's the good angles of attack for doing the new stuff for next year. But it has been really cool to see so many of you at home talk about and reflect about all the goodness that's happened in your life. You know, even if you didn't have a year that you wanted, it has been great to be able to see people push through. It has been awesome to see people have that perseverance and continue to move forward. It has been awesome to be able to see people really share their personal feelings about this year and share their personal feelings about the hope that they may have for next year. So I think this episode is going to be one in which, you know, we're going to talk about some of the games that we're really excited for 2024. And I think the best way to do that is to bring on our co-host for this episode. We got the fam, Cam. Cam coming through. How are you doing? How's everything, fam? How was your 2023? And how are you thinking about 2024?
My 2023 sucked for the most part because I was unemployed for most of this year. But you know, there were some highs, like, you know, scored a book deal, like writing a book on Kingdom Hearts with Alex Ray Korea. You know, I definitely had some really high highs, but definitely like the lowest lows, like consistent lowest lows, like throughout this year. So I'm really excited for 2024. I'm very optimistic, just both personally and professionally. So there's a lot to look forward to, especially if you're a JRPG fan when it comes to video games in 2024. The next 4 months, it's going to be nuts. I'm going to try and play everything, but, you know, there's just so many games already. So we'll see.
I mean, first of all, I gotta be thankful to you for and tell you that I'm proud of you, because again, like you had a rough year, and it was nice to be able to see you turn that corner and kind of, you know, find a good route to some goodness in that mix, and congratulations to you, because I know, you know, you've gotten a gig that you're working through and working on, and that's been a lot of fun. And shout out to Red Fortitude in the chat, who said, happy new year, it's already 2024 here in Australia, the future is bright, looking forward to seeing you all here. Massive love to you, Red Fortitude. I love hearing sentiments like that being shared in our chat. And again, if you're not here watching the show live on twitch.tv/spawnonme, you are messing it up. You know, we are you know, making it happen every week. You're putting out a dope show every week. And if you're not here watching the live show and just checking us out in VODs or in the podcast land on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or all the other places that we reside, you do miss a kind of great part of the shows where we get to mix it up live and do our thing here. You talked about, Cam, and, you know, we're going to talk about some of the games that we are most excited for 2024 in a big way. You are the master of all things JRPGs in my mind. When I think of folks who are in that mix, that far, literally.
But, I wouldn't go that far. But I like to think that I am, you know, I like to say I'm a JRPG enthusiast, right? Yes. You know, I feel like there's enough JRPGs, notable JRPGs that I haven't played yet to like self-title myself as an expert. But like a lot of people see me as an expert because I still know a lot more than like the general audience, which, you know, that's, I definitely think that's true. So, but yeah, I love JRPGs. Like they're my favorite genre of video games. And I think, for like, I think it's really interesting, actually, like that a lot of the games that we like, I don't say we, but like the general audience like proclaims every year as like, you know, kind of like the best and brightest are like normally because of like the characters and the stories. And like, I get that a lot of JRPGs are long, but like, if that's what you're like, if that's what you're acclaiming with video games, you should be playing JRPGs, because that's like those are the best parts of JRPGs, like are the stories, are the characters. It's like, oh, you like this character that, you know, in this like 10 to 15 hour game, and you finish the game and you're like, oh, I wish I had more time with that character. Well, play this JRPG and you got 50 plus hours with them. And like it's just one of those things that I've always found kind of interesting. Like, I get that unfortunately turn-based combat has really, there's been a big disinterest of turn-based combat in modern times, and for me that's still my favorite type of combat. And like, I get it, like I can totally understand the art, like the reasons as to why, but I love turn-based combat. I will like never get tired of turn-based. I think like it's one of those things, like I get that people think that it can be just too samey across different games, but it's also reliable. It's reliably good. Like, you know, you're always like, turn-based combat is 9 times out of 10, it's going to be at least good. And every once in a while, you're going to get that one that was like, oh, like what? Like they'll try and introduce something that just like throws the whole thing off. Like in Final Fantasy VIII, there's a whole like system, it's called the junction system, that is very divisive in the JRPG community. Like some people love it, some people don't. And that is a big factor in general as to why that game is like very like hit and miss for people. So like, you know, turn-based combat can be very there can be a quick determination on like a game's quality if the turn-based combat does not hit for people. But for me, I'm like, it's just that old reliable gameplay for me that I always love.
It feels like one of those things of, you know, when I dip my toe into that space, I also feel like that is a part that I am now kind of leaning into more than I used to, which is the that turn-based layer of it being really important to my enjoyment of what it is, because I think you feel like you have like a really good basis of what can a character do, what can that party member bring to a fight, you know, what does it mean to build a reasonable and good roster, you know, what does that mean for those things. So to hear you talk about, you know, turn-based and having that be the thing that you still enjoy and love so dearly, like that's awesome to hear.
I will just say really quick, like if you're listening to this and you're like, you want to try a game that is just generally good and does have like a pretty like simple but also like a deep combat, turn-based combat system, play Octopath Traveler 2. That is like, that I think that is the game of 2023 that like got overlooked the most. I think that like everyone that I know that has finished that game or have played a good chunk of that game had that game either as their game of the year or in their top three. So it's just, you know, so just to put into perspective, like, it is a really, really great turn-based combat system that is more than just like, all right, attack. Who do you want to attack? It's like there's layers to it that makes it really compelling, and like it brings that level of strategy that you want to that you want in that kind of gameplay.
I did see some Bricago residents when we were doing our nominations for Spawnies did bring up Octopath Traveler 2.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see if it got actually into the final four in terms of nominations for, I think it was maybe best action. Maybe it was like our Ease On Down the Road award. It might have gotten into there somewhere. January 12th, we're going to be doing the show live here on Twitch, on the front page of Twitch. So all of your votes that got tabulated and counted, if you were a person who picked Octopath Traveler and you didn't get into the award show, it's not our fault. You didn't vote hard enough for Octopath Traveler. You should have voted harder for it. So we'll see. On January 12th is going to be our nomination show. So put that down on your calendars as well. We'll be announcing the time a little bit later, probably in the first week of January. So make sure you're here for all of that goodness as well. Oh, nice. Arctic, who's one of our amazing mods in the chat, says Jan 12th. Nice. 2 days after his birthday. Nice. Hopefully that's a nice birthday gift for you as well, to be able to rock with some of that stuff. So for this episode, Cam and I are going to go through some games that we think are some of the stuff that we're most excited for, games that we're really hyped for. And I think you started off the show extremely well, Cam, with your initial dive into the JRPG space, which I am sure is going to be, you know, some of your favorite games. So I'm going to give you the floor and let you run and tell us some of the games that you are the most excited for in 2024.
Yeah, so the first one I wanted to mention is Unicorn Overlord. This is the new game by VanillaWare. VanillaWare is a very highly regarded Japanese developer in Japan. Like, they've, if you're in the JRPG space here, like, you definitely are aware of them. But even then, like, they don't make just JRPGs. Their last game, 13 Sentinels, Aegis Rim, was an adventure game with art, like, and then it was like half adventure game and then half, strategy, like art, not RTS per se, but like, you know, turn-based strategy. And it had a really, really great story. Like, it actually got nominated. It was able to get through somehow the general audience, and it got nominated for best narrative at the Game Awards the year it came out. And it's a really, really great game. And they have a history of like trying out different genres and different perspectives and stuff like that. And it's very clear with Unicorn Overlord, that's like, you know, proving that point. And, you know, I really want to use my time on this show talking about my most anticipated games, talking more about the games that people may have not known existed or may have overlooked or like forgotten about. And it's going to be a banger. This is going to be a guaranteed hit. Like, you should look forward to this. If you like JRPGs and you know, it's probably going to have a great story. VanillaWare, again, is a very well-renowned team. I'm excited to see what they got in store for us next.
That looked pretty too. Like, I think,
oh, gorgeous.
I've also been a person who is now kind of turned a little bit of a hater corner, and I'm now trying to find those tidbits, right, where I stopped doing the thing that I used to do, which was I paint a very broad brushstroke across a lot of JRPGs. But knowing that this is from VanillaWare and them having made some of my favorite games from before, like, I'm just like blown away at the visual styling on this thing. Is there one piece of this game that you're like, is it a battle system? Is it a party system? Is it something in this particular game that you're looking forward to the most?
Well, as far as I'm aware, we only got the one trailer.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen a whole lot. It does come out in March, though. It comes out soon.
Mm.
And it's coming to Xbox, if I remember correctly, which is really awesome. So this will be the first VanillaWare game on Xbox, which, as someone who primarily likes to play their games on Xbox, I'm really excited about that. But really, everything just looks really interesting. Like, I'm curious about the story, especially after 13 Sentinels. Like, they have proven that they can make a masterful story. and the combat looks very interesting and new to me too. So I can't, like, when I see the combat, I'm not immediately like, oh, this looks like this JRPG. It looks like it's kind of own thing. So I'm very curious as to what that's going to look like too. So like, it really is like just kind of checking all the boxes to be, I know my tastes. I know that, like, for me, a lot of the JRPGs I play are going to be in my top 10 for next year. And, like, that's a game where I'm like, I see this being on my top 10 next year. Like, you know, obviously it's early, right? Especially going, like, from comparative to going into 2023, where we knew that we had, like, a laundry list of games. 2024 looks a little bit slower starting off, right? In general. And so things could change, but I'm really excited for this game. I think it's going to surprise a lot of people.
Nice, nice. What's your next game that you have in the mix for you?
Yeah, so the next game I want to talk about is Lost Soul Aside. So Lost Soul Aside is a game that I think back in 2016, 2017, this guy named Yang Bing posted this trailer of this game on YouTube, and he like basically did all of it himself. It was like a AAA level, like it was absolutely insane. And I still like go back and watch that trailer every once in a while because it's just such a great trailer. And for those that know PlayStation's China Hero Project, this is the first game that they took under its wing, under that like initiative, where like PlayStation is helping with the involvement of the development of this game, to the point where they have now decided that they are going to publish this game themselves, which is crazy. This is technically like a first party PlayStation game now, with a, you know, third party developer. It's had a very lengthy development. Like, I think initially they were planning this game to come out in 2021, and it just kept on, you know, and this was like, then that was like pre-COVID. So obviously with COVID, things pushed back. And I think that this game just simply got more and more ambitious over time. And I'm just like really excited because they have said that they are planning to release this in 2024. Like, you know, I always had hope that it was going to come out the next year because it just felt close. It's finally, hopefully, coming out in 2024. It's gonna be a PlayStation console exclusive. As far as the more, it's gonna be a timed exclusive, so it may eventually come to Xbox and PC. But I'm incredibly excited about that. I love the Devil May Cry like vibes, and it's very like Final Fantasy 15 inspired as well. I think the name's Cody Matthew Johnson, who did the music for Devil May Cry 5. He's doing the music for this game. So that's also like a really good look as well.
That's a huge look. I mean, I think I remember seeing this initially too, right when someone was talking about the fan-made project, and I think the initial gameplay we saw was like all of these, it almost felt Elden Ring-esque in the first kind of trailers that we saw, where it wasn't necessarily, you know, big fights going into all these massive places, but it was this like kind of arena where the protagonist was having fights with these bosses, and it was like lots of special effects going on into those fights, which I thought was pretty dope. I like the fact that this is going to be, or giving me some of those Devil May Cry vibes, which is a thing that I love and I'm excited for. Does this feel like, have you heard anything else besides the fact that PlayStation's picked this up in terms of story or anything else yet, or is it still kind of in the weeds yet?
No, it's kind of, basically, you know, they had the initial trailer, and then they had a demo at GDC in like 2018 or 2019. And there were some interviews and like gameplay that came out of that. And then after that, which was something that they were already planning on doing, if you watch like the initial trailer and you watch the gameplay now, they updated all the models of the characters and stuff like that. So everything is updated and like it's notably different from what it originally looked like. We got that, which was a trailer that they released in 2022, I believe. And I think outside of that, that's like the last we've really seen something. But they did say like in an interview or something recently that it's planning a 2024 release, but they haven't said like when exactly.
And you're right. Like the thing that does come across with this is like, again, this started from a one person team kind of, you know, yeah, perspective. Like making something like this is so hard to do on your own. And it looked even in that early original trailer, it looked amazingly polished in a way that you hadn't really seen a lot of kind of one person projects come off as. And for Sony and PlayStation to snatch that up and decide to publish it, I don't know that developer well yet. I haven't seen a lot of cover stories or at least some profile pieces on them. But like, that's an immediate thing that raises people's eyebrows in terms of like, oh, if you're able to do this on your own and you decide to stay independent, what does that mean for, you know, the growth of your career? And does that make you kind of one of those people to watch, you know, like you're a person to watch now in terms of your talent and your ability to kind of make a game in this way? And again, that's very, very rare to see in the industry now. So I'm excited for that. Do we get any good info yet on like when we might hear anything new about this? I mean, I'm sure we'll hear stuff in 2024, but like, did they even get close to talking about when it might go out?
I mean, no. So normally I think every year they have like a convention in China or something like that, where they like
China
update
Joy.
With all the China Joy. Yeah. China Joy.
Yeah.
Where they update the China Hero projects of the news that is relevant for them to, you know, that they're ready to release. Mm. So that is like probably what makes the most sense to me as to when they're going to do it. But I really don't know. They could out of nowhere just be like, because you know PlayStation, even with their big games, they're just like, oh, here's the release date for this. Like,
it's
like,
and here
okay,
it goes. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that is very possible that might be the way they go about it. So who knows?
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm happy you pulled that up because I forgot about that in a real way. When you said the name of it, I was like, I don't know what this is, but then when I saw it, I was like, oh, I totally
I've been championing
this.
I've been championing this game on Twitter for years now. Yeah. And so I had to mention it.
Dope. All right. What's your next game for 2024? What else is on the horizon for you?
I gotta shout out Metaphor ReFantazio, man. Like, I think that over the past 5 or 6 years, right? Atlus has been properly put on the map as a major AAA developer in the JRPG space. You know, Persona 5 was a big hit, and like, you know, definitely there are people in the JRPG space that have always been into Persona and like other Atlus games. Tokyo Mirage Sessions on the Switch is another like really great underrated Atlus game that people should play as well. And this is a brand new IP, which is what makes it so exciting, is that like, you know, I feel, at least when it came to console releases, Persona was like the big console release for years now. We got some stuff on the 3DS, some great stuff too. You know, we got Strange Journey, Radiant Historia, Devil Survivor, some great stuff. But this is a brand new IP. It's somehow like even flashier than what Persona 5 is, which feels impossible. And we're getting it in a real like fantasy setting, which is just super interesting. And like, when I'm just so curious as to what this whole world and reality is going to look like. And what I'm really excited about, or what I'm really most interested in, is actually the turn-based combat, because Persona and like other games too, like Soul Hackers 2, it's very much like they always kind of build their combat off of the kind of one more system, where it's like, oh, you hit their weakness, you get to go again, or like, oh, you hit their weakness, it adds to this stack to do this like all-out attack later. Like, and this one, it shows that there is some like out of combat battling before, like real-time combat before you go into the turn-based combat. And so I'm really curious to see like how all that is going to play out, like what are the new mechanics that they're introducing, and that game just looks insanely gorgeous. Like when they showed that trailer at the Game Awards, I was just like, this is going to be one of the greatest games of all time. I was just like, this looks absolutely incredible. I can't believe this game exists. Like it's really, really great. I'm very excited.
It's interesting too. I mean, again, you saw in the trailer and talked about the from the creators of P3, 4, and 5 as folks who are, you know, well known and their pedigree is already kind of like monumental and kind of established in that way. It is always nice also to see that, you know, teams who have made something that has been so profound and so beloved by so many folks pull back into a new game, some old stuff. Like you, even if you looked at that trailer, you saw a lot of glimpses of the UI that is very P3, P4, P5 in those ways. Mm-hmm. And that's always kind of nice. But also just like these worldscapes that they are building in this game, that thing looks nuts. Like, as a person who is very, very much not in this space, the way to get me in is to I'm very much like a basic biatch.
Just pure curiosity. Like,
yeah, like I'm very, I'm very like, basic.
I need to know what this is. I check this out.
If you show me something pretty, it's going to turn my head. Like that is a thing that works for me really, really easily. So like this now is really like popped up. It was like, okay, I've never played a Persona game. I've never played any of them. I don't know if this is the right start to understand where Persona games fit for me, but this seems like it could be an interesting way to think like, all right, if this is the kind of foundation that those folks have started from in this game, maybe I should go back and check out some of those older games and see where to kind of land for some of that stuff.
I mean, what you're saying actually goes great into my next point is that like, I think Sega and Atlas have been very smart about bringing Persona 3, 4, 5 to Game Pass because it's just like, hey, you're introducing like these games, these iconic JRPGs to like a new platform, new players, and maybe even like players that have like other systems, like prefer to play on other systems, but they are interested in Persona and like, oh, it's on Game Pass. Let me check out Game Pass. And then in Metaphor, like, you know, it gives them that kind of like that taste testing to be like, oh, I want to check out this new game Metaphor now because I enjoyed my time dipping my toes into these games. On top of like, you know, I didn't mention it, but Persona 3 Reload, we got a Persona 3 remake coming out. And like, honestly, Ka, like, I think that if you want to try get a taste of a Persona game, I would play Persona 3 Reload when that comes out because I think that is like, Persona 3 was like the blueprint of like what Persona is now. And I think that it would be like, as someone, because Persona without a doubt is a very overwhelming game to jump into because you have like your dungeon crawling and then you have your social, like how your time management and your calendar and stuff like that, but you also have to deal with but like, and while dealing with all that, Persona 3 is better because it's just like one just tower that you have to climb throughout the game instead of like these different dungeons, so it's a little bit more friendly in that sense. Talk about your thing, what you want to talk about. I got a dog I got to deal with really quick that's barking up a storm.
Astra's like, I got thoughts too about all of those things as well. I appreciate that, of course. Again, you know, that's the beauty of doing a show live is that you have everything that's happening in the background. With Cam away, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the games that I am also really excited about, and then we'll finish up with his last one for sure. But I'm in a space where I'm thinking about a ton of different kinds of games that are in the mix right now. And I think a lot of those different games bounce between the stuff that we knew was kind of coming and stuff that we just hadn't seen anything about yet, or things that we had heard some small initial conversations around, but haven't really seen any more information about. Some of the games that are kind of coming into the fray. The one that I do think is going to be a thing that everyone is super excited about is Hellblade 2. And Hellblade 2, again, I think this is going to be not a make or break game for Xbox, but I do think for folks who have been in that space for a while and have been thinking about what can this console bring to the forefront? What can all of, what does it mean for Xbox to now own 40 studios? What does it mean for Xbox to be a leader in this space from a game perspective and bringing first-party games to bear that not only bolster their claims of, you know, continuing to be players for everyone, but also, you know, in a conversation that comes off of a lot of the, you know, transparency through the FTC hearings of Xbox is in third place and Xbox is not looking to be just a console maker and looking to give you experiences across multiple platforms and all of those things. I think Hellblade 2 is going to be one of those games that really plants a flag, not only for their strategy, but in a way where we're seeing, to be honest, PlayStation kind of have a little bit of shaky ground going into 2024. I think Senua Saga and Hellblade 2 is a game that is really going to bring something very potentially special to the mix in a really profound way. I think it's a game that we've seen talked about in many, many ways. It's a game that we've seen, you know, discussed and shown now in multiple versions of trailers and in multiple places now. And I really do think that, like, from a technology standpoint and now from a potential gameplay standpoint, which I think was the, you know, potential one thing from the previous game that I think was lacking, this game looks to be something that is going to be monumental. Cam, what are your thoughts about Hellblade 2? Because I know this is a game that, you know, a lot of folks are really buzzing about at this point.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a lot of things I want to talk about Hellblade 2 and, like, what it means for Xbox and just, like, kind of the dichotomy between, like, what PlayStation is doing with their first parties and what Xbox is doing with their first parties. And, like, but I do want to say that, first off, is that I think I'm excited about Hellblade 2 the most because I just don't know what to expect from this game.
Mm.
Like, because the first game very much, it didn't feel like a blueprint. It felt like a passion project in a sense that, like, this felt like a kind of one and done type experience.
Yep.
And it was a very experimental experience that a lot of people really resonated with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when it comes to this one, like, what is it going to do to build off that? Like, what is it going to do to make itself bigger? No, it doesn't even need to be bigger and better. But I'm just very curious. That's kind of the point I'm trying to make, is like, what is it going to do to kind of stand out in that sense? Mm. And so, yeah, I'm really excited about it. I am really curious about what it's going to bring. I do think that if it does come out this year, it's like gonna be a likely Game of the Year nominee. I think a lot of people are really excited about it, and, like, you know, I don't want to be like so like optimistic about these things, but I just you know, when you do this for so long, you kind of know what the audience likes, and I think that this is just one of those things. But also, like, you know, Starfield, we thought that for Starfield, right? We thought that Starfield was like gonna happen, and it didn't. And so it's kind of hard to make claims like that now. But it is interesting because, like, I just, not just for Hellblade, but just also for the past year and, like, the future as well of Xbox and first party exclusives, I think that what I like about, and this isn't like, and this is not trying to be like a console war type thing or anything like that, because, sure, like, I mean, like, Returnal is one of my favorite games of this generation.
Love,
like, I loved Returnal was my game of the year for 2021. But I think that in a lot of cases with PlayStation's first parties, I get the same vibes. I get the same, like, kind of experience of, like, presentation and things like that when it comes to play, like, you know, just realistically, a lot of Sony's first person or first party games were and like continued to be designed off of The Last of Us, the first Last of Us when it came out on PS3. And, you know, we do have outliers there. You know, I'm not saying this, it's for all of them. But what I like with Xbox is that everything just feels so distinct, like distinctly different from one another. Like, even if the games don't like hit to the same quality, I find more appreciation of that than like getting a similar presentational experience, like trying to be like this kind of like cinematic level of presentation. Then like, you know, we got Hi-Fi Rush, which is a very animated cartoony style, and then we're getting Fable, which is like a little bit more, it does have like that realistic aspect to it, but it does also feel like a little bit cartoony and like a little bit you know. And then like Avowed, which is when they re-revealed that game, that was like, that the art style was a big shocker. That was like the thing I got out of it the most, like, this looks so different from what that initial like teaser trailer was, where it looked really like this is gonna be a really grounded like Elder Scrolls type game. And I think that Obsidian looked at that and was just like, hey, a lot of people are like saying that, oh, Avowed is Obsidian's Elder Scrolls, and we don't want to be that. We want to be Avowed. We want to be our own thing. And so, like, having all these different sense of identities from all these games, I think I take more interest in of to being like, what are these games going to be like, more than, you know. And it's not bad to see like see a PlayStation game and be like, oh, that's probably going to be a banger, like, you know, because PlayStation has the track record. But this, it's just like, I like being more curious about going into certain games than others, based off art style and presentation. So yeah, I'm really excited for Hellblade. Everything I've seen about it, you know, what they showed at the Game Awards, has been like, yo, what is this game? Like, this is so interesting. And so I'm excited for it. It's definitely one of my like most anticipated games for this year. Yeah,
I think, and I love that you talked about that layer of why and what pulls you into a specific game. I think that that's important for me too. Like, I think also the thing I'm learning the more I've done this work is that those things change over time too. Like, the things that you hope to see versus the things that you kind of know you will see are very different now than when I started in this business. I think, you know, what I look for in this game is the technical achievement. I look for the potential of really good gameplay. I want there to be, you know, I want Xbox to figure out and showcase the power of the system too, even though they are not leaning on that in the full kind of complement for what their kind of moving forward strategy is going to wind up being. It is still really important for people to feel like they spent good money on the box, right? Like, to feel like it is a powerful machine that is capable of doing powerful things. Yeah. And on the PlayStation side, I agree with you a ton, where PlayStation for me used to be the platform of the wacky. Like, you used to get really weird, funky games coming out of the PlayStation side of it. And most of those came from PlayStation Japan in a lot of different ways, like Echo Chrome and, you know, one of my all-time favorites, 4AM, and even most recently a game like Humanity that came out that didn't get a lot of love from a lot of folks. Like, I feel
I've heard it's phenomenal.
It is a dope game. Like, that game is really cool. Great. Especially if you love puzzle games, it is extremely cool. And it has a little bit of the Echo Chrome, you know, a lineage in it, or family feeling in it. But you don't see a lot of those games anymore coming out of PlayStation. And that makes me a little sad, because that used to be their bread and butter. You know what I mean? Like, we wouldn't have gotten a Katamari Damacy in the real way if PlayStation didn't back that game and all everything that game has spawned from its inception. And I still think that Microsoft has still not found that, hasn't been able to capitalize on that as well either. Like, Hi-Fi Rush is probably the closest thing that we've gotten to what that potentially could be.
Right. And Pentiment was like a very
And to a certain extent, Grounded, right? Like, Grounded also is in that mix, too, of those kinds of games that are a little bit wacky, a little bit off the beaten path, but have a good, interesting foundation of what that game can be. So, I love those points. Those are really, really dope. I'm going to go far away from the wacky and go to something that is very, very kind of easy to understand if you're a game player, and that is Suicide Squad Kills the Justice
Really? League. Oh, okay.
I am excited for this game. And
all right, let him cook.
And the reason why is sometimes you have to give people something substantive to kind of lean into. And theoretically, especially after the initial leaks and after all of those conversations and all of the stuff that happened, and everyone was like, this game looks whack because of the combat and all this kind of stuff. Having gotten a chance to play it in the beta or the demo or whatever it was that they put out maybe a couple months ago actually sold me on this game. And it wasn't just the combat parts. It is the writing in this game. The writing in this game and the comedic timing in this game is actually really, really strong. Like, in a weird way, they let out too much of this game. In a way, because you had full capability to kind of like watch and go through a lot of the cutscenes that are in this game. And again, that's not going to be a thing that people are going to be like, oh, cutscenes, you don't play cutscenes, whatever. But I think in a game like this, what you're building is world building, and you're building the ability to give a crap about the characters that are in the mix for this game. And what they did smartly was they held back a lot of the boss fight stuff, but let you initially kind of see how the interaction played across this team of ragtag, you know, supervillains in a lot of different ways. And it actually got me really excited for this game. I'm loving the look on your face, Cam, right now. If you can't see this in audio form, it is an excited and mostly like, what in the hell is Scott talking about? Look. I'm curious to hear your thoughts about Suicide Squad Kills Justice League.
So I saw the leak of there was a leak, I think, of the first mission, like where they're escaping or something like that. Yeah. They're getting into Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was fine from what I saw. And here's the thing, I am a Marvel's Avengers defender. I liked Marvel's Avengers.
Yeah,
and though everything I see from this game just gives me Marvel's Avengers. Like syndrome, like it's just like, it's like, okay, this could very well have a solid to great story, like, you know, main campaign, but when you get into the multiplayer and the live service aspects of it, it just all looks really gross and really unnecessary. And it's heartbreaking that this is I ignorantly saying right now, like, as of right now, like, it is heartbreaking that this is happening to Rocksteady. Rocksteady is, you know, before everything that was happening with the Suicide Squad, and even then, like, I don't even make that claim, but like, just like up to this point, like, Rocksteady is like the top five like best third party developers in the video game industry, and we haven't seen a game from them in almost 10 years. Because they've been working on and off on this. And man, I would love a documentary on the making of this game. Like, I want to know I want to know everything about how this game came to be. And like, because there's just so much history, like, of like, oh, this is a TMNT game. Like, oh, this is a Suicide Squad game. Oh, this is a Superman game. Like, there was just like so much like as to what it was really going to be. And then I think they showed like that group photo of like the motion capture people. And then everyone was just kind of like, oh, this is probably Suicide Squad. Like, it was just kind of like, okay, we're not sure yet, but it gave the vibes of, oh, this is a Suicide Squad game. And then they finally revealed it. And it's just like, I just like, I'm also just very curious. It's like, how is the live service stuff going to work? Like, because this game takes place in Metropolis, so are you just like, are there going to be different locations later, or Are you adding more members to the Suicide Squad that just aren't a part of the story later? Like, that feels like weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it could be introduced like the same way like Avengers, like War for Wakanda, right? To do Black Panther, and like there are ways to do it, but it's just a lot of it is just like, I just don't think the Suicide Squad, I know like they're popular, especially with like the James Gunn film and stuff. And, but I just don't think that they have that gravitas that like Marvel's Avengers has, or like the X-Men have,
sure,
to really make a game like this work. But I'm still going to play it. I'm definitely going to give it's a fair chance, because again, I love Rocksteady, and I want to support Rocksteady. But just a lot of what we have seen, not even what's on paper, what we have seen is just raising a lot of red flags. So
I agree. I think, and again, this is like most anticipated. Most anticipated doesn't equal success, right?
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And I think the thing that I came away from, I want to back up a half a step and talk about Marvel's Avengers, because I think what has happened in the past 5 to 10 years is, I think Marvel has kind of, and this is going to potentially feel like a rant, but it's not. I feel like Marvel has kind of ruined the ensemble superhero genre. And this is the reason why I say that, is because the success of the Avengers and the success of Guardians of the Galaxy in a real way has now kind of ruined the archetypes that then go into those character slots, right? Where everyone is going to look at the big brute who is the big character who is also kind of smart and quirky and weird as an analog for the Dave Bautista character, right? You're going to have that kind of silent protagonist be the analog for Groot in some ways. You're going to have the wacky woman on the that's a little bit off be the kind of what's her face analog that just is in the game that I can't remember her name right now. Why did I just blank on that? Freaking Joker's sidekick. Why can't I think of her name?
Harley Quinn.
Jesus Christ, I couldn't think of Harley Quinn. But like, fits into that Harley Quinn, analog now, right? Where, because those characters were so good and fleshed out and had so much time to bake and cook, the analogs that go across that for a gameplay perspective feel too easy to tie in to what a game like Justice League is going to want, or Suicide Squad is going to be. Like, there's already analogs across Marvel and DC in those ways. Mm-hmm. And you get that mirror effect that blends into the game space where you're just like, well, I had this character over here in Avengers. If I have this character kind of in here that's basically the same character, is similar in Suicide Squad, that I feel like that lends to that, like, does Suicide Squad have the gravitas and the star power to make you care enough about that thing? And I feel like that's where it winds up landing for Suicide Squad in terms of the character stuff in the particular game. The other part of that I want to dig into, let me let you jump in on that point, because I want to jump into the monetization part afterward.
Yeah, so my main issue is that, like, my main worry is that, with the Avengers and the X-Men, if a character were to be added to like one of those games hypothetically, right? Yep. That would give me a high enough reason if the game systems, like in general, are good, to hop back in, play that character, build that character, yada yada yada.
Yep.
I don't think the Suicide Squad has the lineup for that. That's my main issue. I think that like Suicide, like, you know, when it comes to like the main four, like Suicide Squad people, like those are them, you know what I mean? Like, but I just think that one of the funny things about like the James Gunn movie, right, is that like outside of Captain Boomerang, which I you know, that actually does have a bad taste in my mouth, all the characters that like die in the beginning, right of the movie, spoilers, they're like, I don't know who those fucking characters are.
Right, you know what I mean?
So it's just like, when you introduce, like, if they add new characters over time, because this is supposed to be a live service game, who are they going to add? Like, even if the game is good, like, what are they going to, especially because, like, again, like, you're all using the same weapons. You're all using guns. Like, sure, you're going to have, like, certain, like, abilities, but, like, when the core gameplay is the same as well, like, there's no, like, bottom line character variety. That to me is like, I don't know, man.
They're gonna have abilities
yeah. that are gonna make them stand out from each other, but like, when the bottom line is just you're shooting your guns,
I want to be
excited about this game. I'm gonna play it when it comes out, but yeah, I don't know.
I think you can go about it. The only other analog that I think would make some sense is if you go and do basically what the Midnight Suns models was, which was when you want to bring in some of those tertiary characters. Like, yeah, like, not everyone is going to care about the, you know, dot dude. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the dude who had all the little dots on him and stuff. But I do think that there may be some meat on the bone from a story perspective to pull in folks like you did in Midnight Suns, where those characters kind of came in and out. They were like not characters that would kind of come into the main roster, but they would be characters that potentially would have a space to kind of be a side mission, or you do something in that respect where you change it up, or you get a chance to play as some of the other heroes. Maybe you even get a chance to play as some of the Justice League. Like, there may be some places in there where you get a chance to mess around with some of that stuff. My biggest worries do go towards the multiplayer aspect of the game, where the hardest thing was getting a squad of folks to do stuff. Like, that was the hardest thing to do. Like, I think this game is going to live and die on groups of four. And if you don't have a full group of friends who are going to play this, or at least a group of three that are down to, like, explore and play and do the stuff, it was hell to get people to do stuff with randoms. Like, this is a game that I don't think is going to fit well with randoms trying to figure out how to cooperatively do a thing, because and if they don't change the system in which you all have to basically be in the same space and start a mission together, that would make this game DOA on arrival instantly. Like, that was a part of the equation for, at least in the way that it was presented to me. Like, there could be a thing where as soon as you all get into the lobby, the head of the room picks the thing that you want to do, and then it just starts that mission. Like, you'll need to do it either one of two ways. You have to do it that way, or if you're going to do the free roam version of it and everyone have to meet at the spot, at the mission point to start, that's going to be a huge problem for a lot of different folks. Like, I think the MTX layer is going to be the MTX layer. You'll get a lot of skins. You'll get all that kind of stuff that'll be, you know, canon or not canon. But the multiplayer layer itself is going to be the thing that makes or breaks that game in a real profound way. Like, the combat was fun. The combat was interesting. I love the way that they did the kind of story bits. But, like, if that multiplayer layer doesn't hit in that way, that's going to be a problem in a real way. Any last thoughts on Suicide Squad before we move on?
I just hope that when that game comes out, that game is like the multiplayer is in a place where like it is already like it's already solid. Because if it's not if it's not on point at release, game's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, 1,000%. Like, games like this.
And like Rocksteady just like wasted a decade making a game that's dead on arrival. And like that's just like the worst. That's like the worst feeling. Like, and I'm not even, you know, I'm not on the team, and I'm just like, yo, that's just like that's the thing that I have been dreading this entire time. It's just like, y'all, one of the most talented studios in the world working on this live service game that has just got nothing but bad news, bad flack, like the entire development time. And you know, if Marvel's Avengers like was dead on arrival, which it, yeah. realistically it was. It was. Like, even though I still played it, it was dead on arrival. Like, War of Wakanda aside, that game was dead on arrival, the minute it came out, because it just didn't meet the promises that it was, that they said that they were going to, or like the plans that they were going to do.
Yeah.
And so, like, if that game is not out and that game is not in a great shape from the get-go, game's dead.
It makes me wonder if they would have made this game GTA 5 style, where you can swap in between the characters at any point, the model for what this game would have been, as opposed to this live service version of it, if that would have given it more ability to live if it doesn't die on arrival with that thing. I, again, as a person who loves Rocksteady and does not want them to fail on this project because I want them to continue to make dope shit, like, that's going to be rough if that thing doesn't hit immediately. Anyway, my last game, because we're running out of time, it's almost like an hour for this show, is a game that we got a chance to see a little bit of a couple years ago and then finally got another chance to see very recently, which was Nightingale, which is a awesome card-based roguelike game that is coming out that I am very intrigued about. And the reason I'm intrigued about it is not only because I think that this is going to be an interesting kind of like survival sim slash roguelike in a world that I hadn't seen like this before. This feels like it has a little bit of Guillermo del Toro vibes in it in terms of the character design and stuff like that. But the fact that in this game you're picking not only your tools, your weapons, your characters, but you're also picking the enemies and biomes that you're going to fight in via cards and via a card system. And the fact that, like, it's kind of persistent. So, like, if you're building out your world and you're building out your fortresses, enemies can come and destroy all of that stuff and break it and mess it up and beat it down and do all those things. Like, you're seeing right now, like, some of the kind of bosses and some of these things that are in the mix. But that mix of mysticism and, you know, having a game where you're having to constantly think about what you want to craft and what kind of battles you want to go against and fight looks really interesting. Will they nail it? I don't know. It's a new IP. All new IPs are new IPs until we figure out if they're good or not. But, man, I'm excited to see what this potentially can be and if this does land in some form or fashion in a way that, you know, is something new that we hadn't got a chance to see before. Did you get a chance to check out any of the stuff around Nightingale at all?
I have never heard of this game. This looks really cool.
Yeah.
This looks pretty ambitious. Like, when I saw him jump off with the umbrella, I was just like, oh, okay. Like, we're doing some cool stuff here. Like, that looks cool. I'm not a big survival sim person, sure, but, like, just kind of the way that you're pitching that game to me, I'm like, I might be into that. Like, it really just depends on, like, how deep the survival stuff is. Like, if I have to, like, do every which thing, like, then I'm gonna be like, that ain't for me, dog. But if it's like, oh, like, you have the materials and then this thing builds, like, it's like, oh, okay, like, that's a little bit more reasonable for me and, like,
your time.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I don't like Minecraft. Like, Minecraft is not my joint. Like, nope. So, but that looks really interesting. I'm going to keep that on my radar now. Does that have a release window or anything?
I think they did say something about the release. If I'm not
mistaken. Is it early access or is it like a full release?
I think it's early access. I think it was early access and it was February 22nd. 2024.
Wow, that's soon. So oh my
February
god, okay.
22nd is going to be when that game goes into early access. I'm actually a little bit sad that it's going into early access. I feel like early access as a concept is starting to annoy me in a weird way where I like, if your game isn't ready, just hold it. Early access, I feel like, does a thing for some games
Yes.
In some ways that is beneficial, but also for
I think roguelikes are a very specific genre that does benefit, because like look at Dead Cells and Hades, right? Those are two, in most cases, to most people, that is the number one and two interchangeably best roguelikes on the market.
Yep.
And they were both early access games, right?
Yeah.
And this is like a much more ambitious type of thing, where I can totally understand where like they want to have player feedback, people that are playing this game that aren't like, you know, devs, where they have like this bias of like what's right, what makes sense, and get that feedback to build this game together to potentially make something really, really special. And like, again, like it doesn't work for everyone. Like not every game should do it. But a game like this makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
And but I totally understand the idea of it being like frustrating. Like, Yeah.
Because, you know, like the transition from, I think, and this is the reason why it frustrates me. It's not because of the benefit that it has for the developer and for the team. As a player, there's this weird transitional period between early access and retail where, and this is very selfish, it was like, man, this thing was really fun and really interesting and really great, and now I don't have access to it right now, and I gotta wait another year for me to get back into a thing that's gonna potentially not be as good. And in a weird way, with the ways that games are coming out now, you lose a lot of momentum to a certain extent, because you've captured a layer of zeitgeist. You see it happen on Twitch. You see it happen in our circles in the industry. We all get really excited about a thing. We talk about it a lot, and then we move on really quickly to the next new shiny thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of games now with early access, that new shiny thing is no longer your thing, as opposed to here's a demo and here's a release date, right? Like, that's not going to be their release date. Their release date is probably going to be much further down in the year, depending upon what happens with the reaction that they get from the audience. And it also makes it feel like, I don't know if this is a thing that happens often or if it's really been a thing. Like, I haven't seen a lot of games go early access and then just die, except for the last day game that came out the other day that was supposed to be like an online version.
Oh, of yeah, that, yeah, that, yeah.
Whatever that was, that sham. But like,
yeah,
it's a very rare thing for that to happen in the day before. Yeah, I think that's what it was, the day before. And that's a rare thing too now, where like those games just don't live anymore. And you're just like, well, damn, what the hell happened with that? Like, I'm dealing with that with Predecessor right now on PlayStation 5. They put out a really good early access thing on PC. They put out a beta for folks on PlayStation to get some feedback and that stuff. And now I know, even when they talked about that game is going to still be at least another year out before I get the retail version of it. But I've been playing and busting ass on it, right? So I get worried about that. So I worry about the model of early access and what does that mean for potential good energy coming towards the game. Before we get about it here for this episode, episode 503 of the Spawn on Me podcast, any last thoughts, any last games you wanted to share with the audience at home?
Yeah, I had a fourth game that I wanted to talk about, but I had to deal with a barking pug, and, you know, so I want to shout out The Legend of Heroes Trails Through Daybreak. This is a series that I have been playing through, catching up on over the past 2 years. This is a series that's been going on for 20 plus years at this point. And it is, after Kingdom Hearts, it is now my favorite franchise in all of video games.
Wow.
It is the one piece of video games where it's like, it is long. It has its arcs across this past 20 years, but it has the best world building I've ever experienced in video games. Like it sounds ridiculous when you think of like, oh, like this is a game, it's like anime, like, you know, it isn't like this like premium AAA game, right? But when I tell you that this game, this series, these characters, they're so rich, like it's really hard to explain in like 4 or 5 minutes. But this is the reason why I'm excited about the new entry specifically is that this is the beginning of the next arc in the series. Basically, there have been four arcs. This is the beginning of the fourth arc of the series. There's been three other arcs previously, and each arc takes place in a different country on this giant continent called Zemiria. And this this arc is taking place in Calvard. And what's, again, what has me so excited about this is that Calvard is like the, despite it being like the biggest country in the on the continent, we don't know a whole lot about Calvard. Like, we haven't gotten exposed to like a whole lot of people from Calvard and like the culture of Calvard and like things like that. That is just, that is what I've been so curious about since the first game. Cause like in the first game, you have a party member who is from Calvard, and outside of like him and like one other character in the series later on, you don't really know a whole lot about, Calvard outside of like, oh, it's a republic. And we know that, it's very like Chinese culture, like a lot of Chinese names. It's really, really, a really, really phenomenal series. Like, I cannot suggest this series more. If you are interested in starting it, Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky is the first game in the series. Unfortunately, it's only on Steam. You know, the series changed publishers in the U.S. partway through. So, it's just how it is. Hopefully, it'll come to console one day, but I'm not counting on it. But I'm really excited for this game. This will 100% be on my top 10. Like, I love this series. So if you're interested in checking it out, you know, that's the first game you're going to want to start at. And I really can't wait.
Badass. I love it. I love to see when you get really hyped for some of the games that are kind of in the mix. And I think, you know, for the folks at home who did not know that Cam was so well informed about all the JRPG space, this was a damn good episode to understand that was the case, because goddamn, I learned a ton on this episode about stuff that's coming up and coming through. I'm definitely gonna check out some of those games like that what was it called? The Metaphor joint looked really dope, so I'm excited.
Yeah, for that, sure. I think it was harder to say because that was when Asher started barking, but that is a good entry point, because I think it's like gonna be the most simplistic of like the three personas that have 3, 4, and 5, but it's also like they modernized it a bit, so it's going to be a little bit more, I think it would be a little bit more approachable for you, as someone who's not super into JRPGs but does want to try out a Persona game, get a taste of what Atlas does. That is the one I would do.
Yeah, well, I'm excited. Again, like, I think 2024 is going to be a banger of a year. Like, I know it is going to be very hard to top 2023, because 2023 was probably one of the best years for video games in a really long time. But I still think like 2024 has some stuff up its sleeve that we haven't got a chance to check out. I think even, you know, from a hardware perspective, from a video game perspective, in terms of games, there's a lot of unknowns in that space. Do we get a new re-ramp on the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5? Do we wind up getting pro versions of those? Do we get slimmed down versions Switch of two. Those consoles, right? You know, like, those things are in those mix. CES is happening in the beginning of January, and PlayStation has a conference there. They usually drop some information about potential new things that are coming down the line there, you know, in the past couple of years. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting movements happening within the video game world and the video game space moving into 2024. So I got to thank you, Cam, for rocking with me tonight and hanging with me and sharing your thoughts about 2024. Where can folks find more information about you, the stuff that you're working on, and all the goodness that you're bringing to the world?
I mean, my work is here, baby, going into the next year. And, you know, I'm hoping that we can get some, review coverage of Infinite Wealth going into January. Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, I've been playing through the Yakuza series like the past like few weeks, or like probably a couple of months, but like I'm really in the thick of it right now. Like I beat like two Yakuza games in the past like 10 days. Like I've been grinding it out, but I'm a few games away from being caught up, and hopefully once I am, because I've already played Like a Dragon, and that is the biggest hurdle. That's like a 60-hour game that I've already played. So hopefully by the time we can start reviewing that game, I'll be all caught up and we'll have something for you there. And then everything else, you can follow me at Cam Final Mix on Twitter.
Dope. Everybody go and check out Cam, his work, and his, of course, his work will be here on Spawn on Me and all the stuff that we're doing in 2024 together. We have a lot of fun and interesting stuff that are planned for the next year. We may be seeing some on the road coverage from us together, doing some stuff in them streets. We'd be out there. We'd be outside in an actual way. And yeah, I guess for this ending of this episode, I just wanted to remind all of you, please, please, please go check out our nomination show that's going to be happening on January 12th here at twitch.tv/spawnonme. I'm going to see if I can simultaneously stream it to YouTube as well. So we might be doing it on both those places, but I know we'll be on the front page of Twitch for that show. And please, once that show goes down, we're going to be opening up finals voting for the Spawnies. That for the show that's going to be happening at the end of February. So make sure you'll have about a week from January 12th to the 18th or whatever it is to get your votes in for the winners once we talk about what games got nominated. So please, please, please make sure you are a part of that. We'll have multiple ways you can vote. You can be able to vote through our Twitch extension. You'll be able to vote on our website. You'll be able to vote on Twitter. All of those places. You'll be able to get your votes in for 2024's version of the Spawnies, which is rapidly approaching. I'm going to get up out of here. We're going to get up out of here for this episode. Thank you so much for being here this week and every week. Please wash your hands, wash your butt. We know that COVID has been spiking. Please go wear your masks wherever you can and make sure that you're keeping everyone else safe around you. And until then, we're going to get up out of here for this episode, episode 503 of the Spawn on Me podcast. If you're watching here live on Twitch, we'll hang out for another couple of minutes and chat with everybody in the chat. But if you're listening on Spotify or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please, please, please rate us on those platforms. We love getting those 5-star ratings because it makes our show even more visible to all the folks who didn't know that this dopeness was here on the planet. So until then, we're going to get up out of here. Much love to you all. See you all next week. Have a wonderful new year. Happy new year to all of you. This show will be going up tomorrow on New Year's Day. And please make sure you're staying safe. And if you are out there, please drink responsibly. Please don't drink and drive. Please make sure that you find someone who is going to take you home and make sure you get home safely. Until then, much love to you all. See you all soon. See you in the new year. Peace.